So let me tell you about kind of how we get the session, we have the session organized for today. It's going to be several different parts. The first part is going to be getting into kind of some of the nuts and bolts about kind of what is public health. And I'll give you the bottom line on that, and then I'll walk you through some of the elements, how that's shifting and changing. So that'll be a part of it. Then we'll talk about this concept of a high achieving health department and how health and public health and medicine and health care are increasingly working together. In fact, it's a pressure for them to work together, and soon it will probably be a mandate for them to work together. So that's why this is particularly relevant. Then we'll do some breakout group scenarios, and you'll be in teams and you'll work through. You'll do something called reverse engineering of a diagnosis. I'm going to give you a diagnosis. You're going to reverse engineer how you got to that diagnosis, and then you're going to go forward in terms of what your care plan is to address that patient. Only the patient won't be a patient. The patient will be a community. Okay? And so we'll do that. And then we're going to hand out the books, and we're going to take a group photo so we can document this, a very powerful image. And then we're going to do a Q&A. And that's going to be the most enriching part, I guarantee you, because it's no holds barred. You can ask me any question about anything strategically, professionally, personally. And that will be the part that I believe will really, really touch and bless you in terms of how you begin to think through your own personal plan. So let me tell you a little bit. You heard the official bio. Let me tell you a few other things about me, because I would challenge you, whenever someone's in front of you at a podium and imparting knowledge, you should always be asking yourself the question, well, who is this person and what gives them the credential that I should listen to them? Why should I pay attention to what they have to say? So in addition to a number of things that were mentioned in my official bio, let me just give you some other things that might be of consideration for those of you who are starting to formulate your path. When it comes to healthcare in an underserved environment, I have been there. I worked at Martin Luther King Jr. County Hospital, otherwise known as Killer King, because the folks who came into that hospital were on death's door often, because the violence in the community of South Central LA was such that the military sent their surgeons there to learn how to patch up trauma affected patients. So LA County. In Atlanta, I worked in Grady Memorial Hospital, very similar to LA County in that it is the county municipal hospital for the underserved, the poor, and the folks who are falling through the cracks of healthcare. I worked at Harlem Hospital in New York. I worked at Boston City Hospital. I worked at Kingston Public Hospital in Jamaica, at the A&E department, that's accident and emergency, where we treated not only gunshot wounds, but machete wounds in that community, and dealt with a number of violent outbreaks in the community and working there. I also worked at Georgetown Public Hospital, which is in Georgetown, Guyana, South America. So I've been around the globe. I've seen healthcare, public health practiced in every single scenario. I've led around the world, and I have stories, and I have lessons, and I have best practices, and most importantly, I'm in a position where I can answer your questions. Now, that's one scenario, but let me give you the low light piece that you won't get in any bio when you go online, although you will get it when you get through my book. I know you guys got oodles and oodles of time to read, so you'll get to that, you know, probably this weekend. No, I'm kidding. It's a very quick read, though. So let me give you the low light version, because often you don't get that from a professional that's in front of you. They're polished, their degree, their credential, this, that, and the other, but you don't get the low light. So let me give you a little bit of my low lights so that I can kind of break the barrier down a little bit in terms of who I am and how I got to be here. So very, very quickly, grew up in a deficit community. What do you mean, deficit community? Well, a community that had a lot of deficits, and the deficits in healthcare, deficits in dental care, deficits in food security, deficits in education, you know, right on down the line, deficits in two-parent households. So when you're talking about addressing the underserved, when you're talking about looking at health, medicine, public health through a health equity lens, that is addressing those folks who need it the most, those folks who are dragging down the numbers, those folks who are making health and healthcare very costly. Sometimes it's important to have a perspective having been in that group. So just to give you an example, A primary care provider I did not have, nor did anyone in my community have. So what we had was the emergency care and the urgent care. Okay, and you guys will eventually rotate through both of those, many of you. And so when we got hurt, when we got injured, that's where we went. It was a fee for service, and that's how we were patched up. When it came to dental care, it was the Crest mobile van that used to come in and park in the neighborhood every month or so and hand out free toothbrushes and toothpaste and a little dental booklet about how to brush your teeth. There was no preventive dental care anywhere. When it came to food and food security, if I was late to school, I didn't have breakfast that day. Okay, so it was get to school quickly or you'll get there and there'll be a scatter of milk cartons and half-eaten food and you'll have to wait to lunch to get your free lunch because everybody in my community was in that situation. And in summer, where there was no school, which meant there were no meals, you had to count on the Neighborhood House Association and other CBOs that would make sack lunches. So those are the kind of deficits we're talking about. When we're talking about a father in the household, no father in the household. We're talking about education, we're talking about public schools that are overcrowded and under-resourced. So those are the deficits in which I grew up in. Now I tell you that, why? Not as a sense of pride, not as a sense of shame, but just to make you understand that from humble beginnings, great things can emerge. So I was fortunate enough to make a series of better decisions, get myself into UC Berkeley as a freshman with abominably low SAT scores, but with a whole lot of other things going for me. Got it on the campus and decided, you know what, I'm here at UC Berkeley. You know, I may as well think big. You know, why don't I aspire to be something larger than my circumstances in which I grew up? Why don't I aspire to be a physician here at Berkeley? But how do I become a physician? My parents weren't college educated. They couldn't guide me. I was the first one to go to college, the third of four kids, but the first to make it into college. No guidance. So let me go to my guidance counselor and get some guidance. So I went to my guidance counselor to get some guidance, and around the corner comes an African-American gentleman. What are the chances? I'm at UC Berkeley, 30,000 students, mostly a white institution, and my counselor is African-American and male. Certainly, he's going to connect with me. My story is going to resonate with him. He's going to encourage me to move forward and to do big things. So I go in, I sit my JanSport backpack down. You know, I wait the 15, 20 minutes. Finally, he calls me back. Hey, you know, how can I help you? Well, you know, I'd like to become a physician. I want to go to med school eventually. And so I just wanted to come and get some guidance, you know, how to do it. He looks at me and he says, you know, in order to go to med school, you got to have really good grades. You know, 3.5, you know, or better, at least a 3.0. You got to do really well in the sciences, too. I said, okay. He said, you know, if you want to go to medical school, you got to understand it's pretty competitive. You're going to have to take these MCATs, right? And you got to take those MCAT tests, and you got to do well on that. Plus, you got to have the GPA. I said, okay, I don't know what the MCATs are, but okay, there's a test. Okay, good, get it. Okay, good. All right, step two. Then he looks at me and said, you know, to go to medical school, it's very competitive. There's five students for every one slot. So you really got to be dynamic. You got to have a good GPA, good MCAT scores, and you got to compete with five for every one slot. I said, okay. And then finally, he looked up at me and said, maybe you should think about doing something other than going to medical school. I said, wow, this is week one on campus. You know, I ain't got my notebook cracked open yet. You know, I could be the brainiac, you know, in this whole college. You don't even know. So anyway, very, very discouraging. And at that point in time, obviously, I thought someone would endorse my dream, who basically wanted to cancel it out. So as I left his office thinking at age 17, you know, is this the kind of guidance I'm getting from a guidance counselor? I'll show him. Okay, I will canvas this campus and find the things and the resources that I need to make it to where I need to go. And so I never once again visited that misguidance counselor, and I figured out how to do it on my own. All right, so I tell you that not to impress you, but to impress upon you again that you're going to have obstacles along the road. You guys are first year, second year, some of you graduate students, undergraduate students. It is going to be a rocky, rocky road sometimes. But I will tell you, I'm going to give you the bottom line first in this experience. If you would have asked me back then in my deficit community, you know, with my free Crest toothbrushes and toothpaste, or at UC Berkeley when I was having encounters with a misguidance counselor, or the setbacks in medical school, having to be threatened to have to repeat my first year, and some of the other things that you'll read about in my story. If you had told me that some years into the future, I would then go on and be a disease detective, epidemic intelligence service officer at UC, at CDC, or I would go on to lead a county health department or lead the fifth largest state health department in the country, 13 million, a budget of 600 million, staff of 1,300, 200 plus programs, or go on to be a dean scholar, or go on to, you know, lead a national association that's responsible for 3,000 local health departments with a touch of 220 million Americans. If you told me any of that, I would have never, ever believed it. Okay? But there's a secret to how I got there, all the way from there to where I am now and where I'm heading. Okay, some would say I started from the bottom and here I am, right? Okay, so there's a secret. So let me give you the secret first so you can keep this in your mind as we're learning the other things, and then we're gonna get into the nut and bolts of this. Four things you wanna be, okay, that I've learned. It's taken me a lifetime to learn this, but there's four things and I boiled it all down to these. Four B's, okay? So you want to pay attention to this. The first B, the thing you want to be, the first B, be you. Sounds simple. Be you. What does that mean? That means be authentic to who you are. Your story, your experience, your narrative, your aesthetic, your style, your interest, your diversity, be you. Okay, sometimes we get socialized in medicine, health, and education, and we want to be our mentor. Okay? You don't want to be your mentor. You want to be you. Because sometimes you will see, as I have seen over the course of my career, you're the only one in that room, in that think tank, in that meeting, in that community gathering that has your perspective. And if you're not bringing it, you're not meeting your potential and the reason why you're there. Okay? So your worst you is better than your best imitation of anyone else. Be you. That's number one. Number two, be audacious. Be bold in your goal setting. I'm just going to make it through. I'm just going to get this paper. Okay, no, be bold. You're going to change the community. You're going to change the arc of health for folks. You're going to change the world. You're going to discover the next important discovery. You got to be bold. You got to be audacious in your goal setting. So be audacious. Number three, be passionate. Anything worth pursuing is worth pursuing with boundless enthusiasm. So if you have a bold goal and you're passionate about it, that's the thing that's going to wake you up in the morning. That's the thing that's going to push you through your final exam. That's the thing that's going to encourage you to keep trying when you've had bad outcomes, or when you feel like you're being hazed, or you're overloaded, or you can't go anymore. You're feeling like you want to drop out, break down, take a semester off. It's that passion that drives you. When you don't get that attaboy, that you did a great job, you wrote a great note in the chart, okay? When you don't get that, it's the passion that keeps you going. So be passionate. And here's the fourth and last B. And I came upon this later on. It used to be three B's, but I realized it had to be four B's. So here's the most important B. Be humble. Be humble, okay? Many of us are the first generation to go on to college, maybe even to med school. You guys are going to be professionals, and you're going to be professors and leaders and clinical directors and all kinds of things. But at the end of the day, it's not about you. It really isn't. It's about those folks that you're going to touch. It's about those communities that you're going to improve. It's about the patient, Mrs. Jones and Mr. Taylor. It's all about folks outside of you. So you got to be humble so that you can be relatable and that you can maximize your potential in terms of what it is you're trying to do. So that's it, four B's. If you aspire to be those four things as you go through every stage of your career, I guarantee you will be met with success.